water, earth, fire, air. Months ago, all of us could come and go as we pleased in harmony. Then everything changed when the pandemic attacked. Only the TV series Avatar, The Last Airbender, a series our friends kept telling us about, would stop us from anxiously watching the news. But just when we needed to stream it most, it vanished.
About a year has passed since my cousin and I started podcasting about Avatar, and although we've all been through a lot in this past year, we believed Aang could save the world. And you know what? We were right. After ending the 100-year war, with the help of their friends, Avatar Aang and Fire Lord Zuko transformed the Fire Nation colonies into the United Republic of Nations, a society where benders and non-benders from all over the world could live and thrive in peace and harmony. They named the capital of this great land Republic City. Avatar Aang accomplished many remarkable things in his life, but sadly, his time in the world came to an end. And like the cycle of the seasons, the cycle of the Avatar began anew. This is Kin Folklore, Avatar, the Legend of Korra.
People of Republic City, welcome to Kin Folklore. We're back to explore the world of Avatar by delving into the complexities of its sequel, The Legend of Korra. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and we're cousins who podcast about our favorite fantasy and sci-fi television shows. After concluding our coverage of Avatar: The Last Airbender, we decided to continue exploring the world of bending by covering the comics and now following the journey of Avatar Korra as she navigates the post-war world.
Last week, we learned what the new era that Korra started looks like for the citizens of the Four Nations. Korra is at odds with the president of Republic City again. Spirit vines have taken over part of the city. Airbending is back.
Yes! I'm hyped.
And a group of criminals who have been imprisoned for 13 years are busting out and pursuing Korra. This week, we learn more about what has happened to the airbenders of Ba Sing Se, and we'll visit the city of Zafu, where we'll meet some new and important characters in episodes 4 through 6 of Book 3, Change.
I mean, the over-under on this whole situation of leaving the spirit portals over is really not working out so great right now. I'm just saying. But Kin Folklore will have adult content. And today's adult content is inspired by the harmonic convergence. It represents the dawning of a new age, obviously. I mean, it kind of looked like a banana. I'm not going to lie. It does look like a banana. And at the Northern Water Tribe, Tunrak, Zuko awaits Zaheer's attack. They're chilling there. We got what appears to be a snowstorm coming. I mean, tough look for Zuko. He thinks it's a snowstorm, and Tunrak was on the ground while Zuko had a dragon. He's like, that's not a snowstorm. That's Zaheer. They're here, right? So Tunrak, Zuko, Eska, and Desna, an iconic duo if I ever did say so myself, Eska and Desna are there, and they're ready to stop Minghua. And let me tell you, Eska and Desna are showing out. Mm-hmm. They got shit coming out the ground. The spikes are flowing out. Like, she has to dodge multiple ice shards swinging through them to get to them. But, you know, Pali is like, is their mission, and they're going to get to her. So Minghua just, she washes them. I mean, literally washes them in seconds. It was pretty
yeah,
unbelievable.
They try. They make a valiant effort here, but it's not. Listen, Zaheer's group is good. Let's just put it like that.
Yeah, no, for sure. And so she breaks out. Minghua breaks out Pali really quickly. And she's a very powerful combustion bender.
Sparky, sparky, boom, man.
Yeah, this year, the descendant of. I wonder if that's his kid. Could it be? Maybe.
It would explain why she's so mad. Didn't Team Avatar
Team Avatar took Team Avatar. If that's her dad, Team Avatar murked her dad. Like, I was thinking about that. I was like, yo, that would make a lot of sense. So I wonder. Let's keep that there, not explained. And you know, she comes out, and Zuko's dragon tries to come in, Dracarys, but it doesn't work out for him. She wrecks the dragon, and Zaheer and other members of his gang escape. Back in Ba Sing Se, Bolin and Mako have a tearful goodbye with their family, but they're eager to get back to Korra to tell her about the Earth Queen capturing the Airbenders. Guys, she kind of knows. She knows, doesn't have the proof, but she does know some. But I'm glad. It was nice. It was very tearful. It was sweet. They had a group hug in there. It's really nice. I loved it. When Mako and Bolin return, Korra's practicing sparring with Asami, and Asami is like, hey, can we take a break? Because you're kind of wrecking my hands. This is not,
I mean, she's like beating the hell out of Asami's hands. Like,
yeah. I felt for Asami in this moment. She's
I was like, Asami is a non-bending human. Like, can you give her a break, please?
She's a non-bending human. Please stop. I love it. So, you know, as she's venting about the Earth Queen and having being a liar, and her frustration is just growing and bubbles over, Mako tells her and shows up and lets her know, hey, you're right. The Earth Queen is a liar. She's forcing airbenders into her army and keeping them captive. She's like, and then Korra's talking big shit. Like, she's like, hey, wait till I see her face again. I'm a get. And to her credit, Korra shows some restraint, which is not normal for Korra when the Earth Queen pulls up. So the Earth Queen comes in and she's like, so I heard some good news for you that there are airbenders in province and you should go. And they're like, oh, cool. Yeah, whatever, whatever. She's basically trying to get them out of the city. So the Queen begins to have an allergic reaction to Pabu, which is quite hilarious. I mean, I got to say, like, watching her have a little allergy attack because Pabu's inside his bowling shirt.
It was the most relatable moment, though. I mean, this queen is terrible, but I felt for her. My allergies have been rough.
It's rough. It's been a rough allergy season, for sure. For sure. I mean, more on this later, but it makes me feel like, what kind of relationship does she have with her dad if she was this allergic to pets when her dad was always with Bosco?
Well, I mean, this we're is gonna my find thing. Out. Listen, I have a whole rant about the Earth. This whole family, they make me so mad.
They're rough. They're a rough bunch. They're definitely a rough bunch. So as she's having this asthma attack because Pabu's hiding in Bolin's shirt, Korra insists that they stay another day, despite the Queen's wish for them to depart at once. And Asami kind of covers her about the airships and the whole thing, and then, you know, eager to be out of the presence of whatever is causing her allergic reaction, she kind of is like, whatever, and buys Asami's story about the airships having issues with the engine. When they debrief, the rest of Team Avatar says and Korra say they want to release the airbenders, but they don't know where to find them. Lucky for them, Jinora's on their team. Because, oddly enough, a guy that we dunk on quite a bit has been reading the history books that Jinora has laying around. When did he have time to do that between getting kidnapped and, I mean, being lost in Ba Sing Se and everything else? I don't know. But he does.
Well, they were on the airship traveling from city to city for weeks, I think. That's true. So he probably had time. I mean, he's not a big talker, Mako, so he probably was reading the books while everybody else was like gathered around chit-chatting, because he's kind of awkward, right?
As he watched Asami and Korra hang out, wondering where he went wrong. Oh, man, he cried into his scarf as he read Jinora's books. I get it. Okay, I'm with you. Okay, I'm back up to speed now. And he basically says, well, what about, I bet you they're being hidden under Lake Laogai, because he knows about, you know, there is no war in Ba Sing Se. And they decide to let Jinora, who informs them that she still can project herself in the spirit realm and spirit form, down underneath where Lake Laogai is. And so they take her there. They're going to go. They decide that that's the way to roll. In the compound, a Dai Li agent trains the airbenders. Kai shows mercy to another airbender and is told that you know what, man? That's not allowed. You got to wreck him. If you're going to be in the Queen's Army, you better show no mercy. I mean, I feel like he's watching Cobra Kai, but I digress. Janora's spirit projection checks under the lake, but there's no one there. Lake Lao Gai is actually just abandoned, and it looks like it's filled up with water. It looks like there's no secret lair under there anymore. They let that go.
I don't trust the Dai Li. I don't think we've seen the end of Lake Lao Dao. So.
Yo, defund the Dai Li. There you go. I love it. I love it.
I don't trust them.
When she returns to her body, they try to figure out where else they could be. And Janora rings off about 20 million places that they could be. Like, well, they could be here and they could be there and they're sad and where this intersects. And they're like, oh, there's just too many options. So Korra suggests that Janora use her connection to Kai. Tenzin is like, what connection? Like, I was like, I felt Tenzin in this moment. Like, I felt like, Korra, what you doing talking about? I know you have a connection to Kai. I'm like,
this is what I find so amusing. You are as annoyed by Janora's potential relationship with Kai as Tenzin is.
Because she's too young. I was growing up. This is what's giving these pickney out here the wrong impression. These young people out here thinking they're grown at like 12. Like, she's no older than Aang was when he saved the world. But was Aang grown? We know. We always talk about, well, he was only 12.
Okay, but her grandparents booed up when they were young. I'm just saying, like, Aang was what, 13? When him and Katara got together?
Aang and Katara had no parents. They were looking for love because of their damaged past. Okay?
Katara had her father.
That's true. But where was he at? Hakoda was out here fighting a war. He was out. They were left to their own devices. She was being led by Sokka. And that didn't go well because she was like, I'm going to be... Listen. Sokka was the oldest person in the village outside of Grand Grand.
Well, he was the oldest guy, I think.
Oldest male in the village. This is what I'm saying. This is like what I'm saying. So Aang and Katara are different. Now, I do take issue with the creators a little bit, because why they always gotta boo these little children up?
I agree entirely. I'm just saying that in this world, Janora is not too young to be booed up with Kai, because her grandparents were booed up.
I'm gonna move on because I'm feeling tense right now. I hear you though. I do hear you. So Kai is having a tough time in training, and eventually is like, "I'm tired of this," and attacks the Dai Li drill sergeant. Wow, the kid has courage. He gets thrown into solitary, and then Janora spirit projects into his cell, and he's like, "Janora." And then he's like, and then it's like the whole thing. And I, you know, it's like a spirit airbending thing and the whole thing, and like tells him. And he's thankful. He says, thank you, Janora. And it's like a really nice touchy moment. She tells him that they're going to get him out of there as soon as she discovers where they're located. And she does discover that they're located underneath the Earth Queen's temple. As for Team Avatar's plan for the prison break, Lin Beifong shows up, arrives, and insists that Korra is in danger and must leave. To which Korra's like, I'm not leaving. You can't make me. I'm the Avatar. You got to deal with it. I'm going to do what I want to do. And you know what? I'm not a little kid anymore. You can't keep me from everything. I mean, this was wild because she doesn't have any clue what's going on. And she's like, but wait a second. Who are these people that are trying to kill me? To which Tenzin tells her that Zaheer attempted to kidnap her when they discovered that she was the Avatar. Tenzin, Sokka, Tone Rock, her dad, were able to capture Zaheer and his gang, and it's the reason why Korra was kept isolated in the Southern Water Tribe, which is how we know now why everybody came to train Korra versus her going the normal traditional way avatars are, to go around to the different nations and train with the master in that environment. Side note, I got questions that I want to discuss later about Sokka and his role in this. Like, I wonder how that plays out. And it's really interesting to me that he was involved in bringing them down, and that's around the time period when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Lynn agrees to help. Not because she's feeling benevolent and just wanting to help.
No,
because she wants to wrap this shit up, man.
Yeah, let's go. Okay, get your dumb airbenders and let's go.
Let's roll. Exactly. So, that night, they break into the compound and split up. Bumi, Tenzin, and Korra go to break out the airbenders. The others go in search of Kai. They quickly find the airbenders and radio in Lin and Asami to bring the airships. Bolin, Mako, and Jinora find Kai, but spend a little too much time reuniting. You know, they're all happy and they're like having a whole dialogue, and Kai gives a whole apology, and Bolin says, "We can't stay mad at you," and Mako's like, "Fuck, we can. I'm going to stay mad at this little dude." And the whole thing unfolds, and then there's the Dai Li, right? So they end up having to have this whole fight against the Dai Li. The others are also intercepted on the way out by the Queen and the Dai Li. And the Earth Queen threatens them, and the Dai Li attack, but all the airbenders manage to fight back so they can escape on the airships. Tenzin and Korra escape on Ugi and manage to go back and scoop up Bolin, Mako, Jinora, and Kai. Bolin, like, you know, earthbends them into the air, which was like, you know, that's a lot of faith. I'm just going to earthbend us into the sky. I hope you catch us. I love it. They do. And they, you know, we see them on the back of Ugi. And in the morning, Tenzin offers the airbenders I thought a really solidly touching scene, the option to join him at the Northern Air Temple. He says that they have a free choice. They're not prisoners anymore, and that they can go to the Northern Air Temple and choose to train with him, or they can find them someplace safe to be where they'd like to go. Korra, Mako, Bolin, Lin, and Asami are going to go in search of more airbenders as the rest of the newly found airbenders travel to the Northern Air Temple. And that's where the episode ends.
Oof, okay. I mean, I don't know why Lin agreed to go with them to search for more airbenders, but that's a whole nother.
Well, Korra didn't really give her an option. She kept telling her, like, no, we got to go. I'm going to stay out here. I'm not really trying to hear what you have to say. I think Lin is just, like, understands the danger more than Korra's grasping it right now, you know? So, mm-hmm. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. And Tenzin's wild for just being like, oh, we got all these. I mean, Tenzin has prioritized these airbenders over people's shelter and safety. He's prioritized air. He's like, yo, it's really not your problem as the Avatar. You got more spiritual things to deal with. The people starve or they go hungry or the world falls apart. Not a big deal. He's now left Korra to her own devices against one of the most ruthless bending teams that we've seen in the Avatarverse. Like, literally, they're the opposite of Team Avatar. And he's like, yeah, I'm just going to go back over to the Northern Air Temple, and you guys figure that out. And, you know, Lin, good luck with your metal bending and none of your police force. It's wild. It's super wild. He's very, very clear that he gives zero fucks about anything other than this airbending life right now.
So, episode 5, The Metal Clan. Somewhere in the Earth Kingdom, Team Avatar is relaxing and awaiting reports of other airbenders. Mm-hmm. Chief Beifong tells Korra that she would feel a lot better if they could return to Republic City. But then they receive a report that an airbender has been identified in Zaofu, the home of the Metal Clan. When they arrive to Zaofu, Lin refuses to join them in the city. And, you know, she's usually pretty grumpy, but she's acting even weirder and more grumpy than usual.
Wait, she didn't even just refuse to just go into the city. She refused to get off the airship. She didn't want to go to this motherfucking place. And then on top of that, she was like, I never even been there.
Wow. True. Yes, she did. She did lie about it. And she tells him not to let anyone know that she's there and stays, you know, she stays behind. Mm-hmm. So the city is made of metal and there's a huge monument to Toph in the center, which is really nice to see. Bolin asks their guide if Toph lives there, and he tells them that many years ago, Toph left to wander the world and seek enlightenment, and no one has seen her since. This is hard for me to buy.
Me too, because
I was just like, wait, Toph went to wander the world to seek enlightenment? Like, this doesn't make sense. My opinion is that Toph was just like, I don't want to deal with y'all no more. I'm out.
And they came up with a very nice, rosy way to say that. Like, they were like, because Toph has been in numerous conversation where she's like, yeah, whatever about this whole, like, you know, the past and enlightenment and all. She's not worried about that shit most of the time.
Yeah. So when they arrive at the Airbender's home, they meet her mother, Suyin, who is leading a dance troupe in rehearsal. Really beautiful dancing, too. They're, you know, using metal bending to, you know, to climb up on walls. It's just really cool.
It's like Cirque du Soleil in Zalfo.
Yeah, sort of. So yeah. Suyin greets them all by name and asks why Korra lied to their guide, Ai Wei. It turns out that Ai Wei can sense when people lie, just like Toph. And Korra confesses that, you know, Lin was with them. And Suyin is very excited because guess what? That's her half-sister.
What?
So they all head to the airship where Lin and her sister, they don't have like a rosy, can't miss you so much.
It's frosty. It's damn near like frozen over. Frosty is almost too nice.
Frosty seems like an understatement. These two are not friendly. They have some sort of 30-year-old beef going back to when they were children. So Suyin takes them to meet her children. She has five. Wei and Wing, who have created a game that they call Powerdis. Huan, who is a meadow bending sculptor. Opal, who is the daughter, who is an airbender. Really cool. Mm-hmm. We'll meet the other kid later. And she basically, you know, introduces them to Opal. Opal's super excited to meet the Avatar and seems really excited to also meet her aunt Lin. And she, you know, she begins to have a little connection with Bo Lin.
She's like, yeah. Well, it's really cute to see the blushing and everything with what's going on with Bo Lin and what's going on with Opal. But, well, it's hilarious. It's like, Lin is like, yeah, let's get this airbender. Let's get out of here. And Sue is like, oh, and this lady who's trying to kidnap you and abduct you is your aunt. Oh, God.
So Sue insists that they all stay. She's got the guest houses ready for them. And she wants Opal to be trained there. Opal seems actually quite excited at the prospect of leaving and going to Air Temple Island. Excited to go to the Northern Air Temple, which is where Tenzin went. But, you know, her mother kind of like hand waves that away. She thinks it's safer if she stays in Zafu.
She's on some real like 1%er shit. Like she is like, no, stay here. We have her family here and then we have servants and I've put you up in the room. I'm like, yo. We get it. You built the whole city. Calm down, lady. Calm down.
Later, Korra begins to train her, and Opal appears to be a natural airbender. She's really good. Mm. Meanwhile, back on Air Temple Island, there's, you know, a handful of benders who have shown up. The most recent recruit is Zaheer himself. He has a whole new look. He doesn't look anything like he looked in prison. Milo and Iki are training the new airbenders, and as Milo is training them, Zaheer shows that he is the most skilled by far. I mean, this guy seems like he's been airbending his whole life. Mm-hmm. Kaya tells the group that Tenzin has sent a message, and he wants them to join him and the other airbenders at the Northern Temple. And Zaheer inquires, you know, is the Avatar there? And seems disappointed when Kaya tells him that no, Korra is not with Tenzin. They had to split up. In Zalfu, Sue treats her guests to a lavish meal and her husband, in Zalfu, Sue treats her guests to a lavish meal, but her husband, Batar, and an architect, and their eldest son, Batar Jr., which I'm just like, this poor kid. Mm-hmm. Stop by and say they can't join dinner because they're working on an important project. Bolin and Opal seem to bond more. Definitely a little button romance here.
Yeah,
and
like
Korra tells Sue about the Earth Queen. And Sue responds with something that seems a little bit, you know, it's different. Different line of thinking. She doesn't think that queens should exist anymore. The world is evolving.
Should they? I mean, in this world, and the thing that was wild was she feels like we feel about the Earth Queen. She's like, oh, she's the worst. Like, and I was like, oh yeah, this is awesome. I I'm feeling where what Sue is putting down. That's all I'm going to say.
I don't disagree. I mean, I think monarchies are quite out of date, but it was surprising to me that she would say it so openly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, metal bending feels like it's a real spinoff from the traditions of the Earth Nation, right? So like that, I mean, the Earth Kingdom. So they're probably the upstarts in general. They call the Earth Queen is probably like, I'm done with those folks.
Mm-hmm. So also at dinner are two characters. I just find this remarkable. I just Varric and Julie are there.
What the fuck? To which Asami is like, Varric, what are you doing here? And Varric is like, what are any of us doing here? Food for thought.
let's just backtrack. So the last time we saw Varric was when he was riding out of prison on Julie's back.
Yeah.
And somehow he landed on his feet in the Earth Kingdom. And now he has a business partnership with Sue. This is, I was deeply upset about this. And guess who else was?
Lynn. It was a bridge too far.
Lynn could not take it. Lynn was like, I don't understand this. This man tried to kidnap the president. How can you have him just sitting at your dinner table?
So she's like, you haven't changed a bit. You're getting on my nerves and you're harboring criminals and you're telling me that the Avatar is like waste and you're wasting the Avatar's time. I'm done with you. She's like, she was done. She's done with this shit.
It's just something else. I mean, Varric has a very good reason for being there in terms of what they're working on. They're working on a high speed rail, which will become important later in the series. But I just cannot get over the fact that there is a wanted criminal who busted out of prison. Just chilling at the dinner table like it's nothing.
Testing magnets. He's like, magnets. It's my new invention. Oh, my God.
So Lynn storms off because she's pretty pissed that her sister has a wanted fugitive just sitting at the table. And, you know, later Sue tells Cora what happened between her and Lynn. Apparently, when they were children, things were quite difficult. They didn't know their father. And Toph was more interested in being the chief of police than being, you know, a parent. And she gave them a lot of freedom. And mostly because she resented her own strict upbringing.
Classic overcorrection. It's a classic overcorrection.
Yes. And we will talk at length more about Toph's parenting skills in a later episode. But this upset me a little bit because I'm just like, did any of Team Avatar really grow up to be great parents?
It's not looking good. I mean, Zuko, of all the people who
are like, we sure that Zuko's a good parent?
I mean, it seems like it so far. I mean, look at his grandson is a pretty stand up dude. His daughter,
seems
to be doing really well. I think that having Iroh and like reconnecting with his mom, like Zuko honestly is one of the few people in this story that had the opportunity to go back and heal their relationship with their parent. Or their Aang would never have it because his whole tribe got wiped out. Katara's mom was dead also, so he was one of the few people who actually like finds his mom, you know, like heals their relationship and finds out all this backstory. I mean, obviously he didn't make peace with Ozai, but he can make peace with the fact of who Ozai is, you know, and then exercise his own demons. I'm projecting here a little because we don't know this for sure, but he's not the Fire Lord, right? So, like, we know that for a fact that he's not. So, at this point, like, he was able to step down and, like, not be power hungry like Ozai, too. So, I think he's probably the most fully formed, evolved person ultimately out of Team Avatar, other than Katara.
Yeah, I was going to say, Katara. I mean, Katara has shown us that she has a lot of capacity for both compassion and love for her children, but also she is intuitive and she knows when they need to just go off and figure things out on their own. So,
I'm going to say something because there was a little bit of scrum on some of the internet that we're a part of this week about the whole Katang and Zutara stuff. And I'm on record. I love Katang because of the Earth, the airbending kids and Tenzin and all of that. But having this conversation, reflecting on this week on the internet, and in general, just thinking about it, I'm gonna say something that's very, very pivotal to myself in this fandom. Zuko and Katara being the best two parents, perhaps Zutara should have been a thing.
Wow.
Perhaps it should have been a thing, because they are easily the best two parents out of everybody in Team Avatar that we know of so far.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that when we wrap Korra, we should really talk through the Zutara stuff, because I feel like people just think that Zutara fans just think that Zuko and Katara make a cute couple. It goes beyond that. There are reasons that them as a couple is problematic. No one is mm-hmm. objecting to that. Zuko did try to murder Team Avatar multiple times. So yeah, Zuko's not a perfect character, but there are certain things that Zuko brings out in Katara and certain spaces he makes for her that I just don't think Aang ever did. But I don't want to get too off track. I don't want to get too far from the story we're in right now.
I'm not. I just feel like this was an appropriate moment to speak about the parenting. And of all Team Avatar, of previous Team Avatar, we are in agreement that those two are the best two parents. And we'll leave it there. You know what I mean? For now.
Okay. Well, yeah. So let's get back to Toph, Lin, and Sue. Because basically what Sue tells Korra is that she... You know, this dynamic with their mother led to the girls both fighting for their mother's attention. Mm-hmm. Sue ended up leaving home at 16 and traveling the world, and Lin, who really wanted her mother's approval, joined the police force. So after speaking to Mako, Bolin decides he's going to make a move on Opal, because Mako has, you know, made him realize that he shouldn't just let that linger.
Yeah, but first let's talk about how... freaking out of order Bolin is. This guy who was
I'm gonna get there. So Mako very rightly calls out the fact that Bolin's previous love interests were Eska, who has problems, right? Is not a great girlfriend, and a movie star who didn't want any part of Bolin until he was like very famous and loved. Okay.
And conveniently left out Avatar Korra, who was like a quick one date kind of situation, but still he was feeling her a little bit. He conveniently left that out.
Right. And Bolin was wrong. Acting like Opal's not good enough. She's not his type. What's your type, bruh?
That's what I'm...
What's your type? Mako, women who don't want you in Eska? Like, that's your type?
This is the moment that you knew that him and freaking Mako were brothers. I was like sitting here like, what are you talking about? You're delusional. Like, you, this girl likes you, and you have struck out in every situation thus far in the category of love. We're out here talking about, we hope he finds love someday in previous episodes. Come on, my guy. Like, get over yourself. Let's go.
Wait, Opal seems amazing. She's sweet. Amazing. She's smart. She's a natural airbender. I just don't. Whatever. I like Bolin, but this was not a good moment for him. So he goes to talk to Opal. It's super awkward. Opal calls him on being super awkward and tells him to just be himself. I love her.
I don't like the way you're talking to me, she says. I don't like the way you're talking to me. You're being weird. Like,
yeah,
I don't like it.
I love this girl. I was just like, yes, Opal, communicate. Tell him it's weird.
Yeah.
Korra interrupts because she needs Opal's help. So we head back to Air Temple Island for a moment, and Iki, who's wandering the hallways at night, God knows why, interrupts Sahir, who is in Tenzin's study, and he's reading the poetry of Guru Lahima, and he has this medallion. And when Kaya comes in and she tells Iki that she should go back to bed, Kaya is suspicious of Zahir. Why is he there? So she questions him, and then she recognizes who he is. The two of them fight, and, you know, the White Lotus guards assist her, but he manages to knock her out and escape. And once again, these guards just... fire them all. Start over. They're terrible.
Yeah.
They're really bad.
Really, really bad. And he calls out that later, and I'm going to go. I have some stuff to talk about with that, but I just want to shout out Kaya first of all, recognizing what the hell was happening here, being protective of her niece, and then just great freaking fighting skills. I mean, probably one of the few people I have ever seen. I think maybe the only person I've seen, like, do that whole water thing in the two different directions and levitate off of the ground while like the Avatar, like, while, like, I was like, whoa, she can really fight. Like, she's like, can bend. She's a bender.
Yeah, I mean, Kaya and Tenzin are great benders. Which, mm-hmm. they don't actually get that much time to fight. We don't see them fight often, but they're mm-hmm. really, really solid benders.
Agreed.
So in Zafu, Korra takes Opal to speak to Lin, and Opal tells Lin that, you know, she wants to get to know her. She wants Lin to be part of the family. Lin is her typical self. She tells Opal to leave, and she's really rude to her. I mean, it was kind of mm-hmm. painful to watch. And then Korra loses it at Lin because she was so mean to Opal, and tells her that she will always be a bitter, lonely woman, which I was not pleased with Korra's choice of word, behavior, and yet the whole thing is terrible. Like, Lin is wrong.
Out of order.
Yes, Lin is wrong. Korra is wrong. Opal's the only person in this entire interaction that is not horrible.
And shame on Korra for roping sweet, innocent Opal into your manipulative scheme to, like, get into a family feud that's been going on for 30 years. Like, legit, I know you had good intentions, but just go talk to Lin. Like, how are you going to take this girl who's innocently like, oh, yeah, I'll do that, and go try to... I mean, all of it's true. Opal does want a relationship with her aunt. But it's just like, I don't know. Korra, that was rough to, like, be like, you're always going to be alone and bitter. I was like, golly, man, like... All the misses you've had that we've all endured, that's probably the wrong tact.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So. It's not a great look for Korra. Anyway, this whole family, let me just say this. I mean, I think it's a good point to talk about this. This is actually one of my favorite storylines from this show.
Yeah.
We've said this before, and we talked a little bit about Aang and Katara's children, but the sibling parent dynamic amongst the adult is very realistic, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. This feels like, it feels real to me that Lin would be holding on to this resentment. And we'll talk more about why she's so resentful, that Sue is a little bit dismissive of it. Sue is also like, and has some of those, like, hallmarks of a manipulative little sister, right? Mm-hmm. When she tells mm-hmm. Korra the story of what happened between them, she leaves out some key details, which we'll learn in the next episode. But it's hard not to be angry at Lin for being so standoffish and cold, especially when Sue and Opal are making such overtures trying to get her on their side. But we know Lin, and we know that when Lin has a beef, it's because somebody's hurt her in the past. Mm-hmm. And it's like a really tough episode because Lin seems like, not the villain, right? But she seems like the one who's being unreasonable. But if we just sit with a moment and think about the Lin that we know that she behaves this way when she's not trusting someone. And it does seem like she has some good reasons for not trusting Sue, and some really good reasons for being, like, frustrated with having Toph as a mother. So yeah. I love all the Beifong family dynamics. They're just as interesting to me as the Aang Katara family dynamics. The adults in the show continually to be written really well.
I agree. And I think it's a strong point of this show specifically, and I think it's a strong point of for the whole entire world, in the sense that what you're seeing, what they haven't shied away from in this series is, yes, we celebrate a OG, well, I can't even say OG because there was Team Avatars before them, but Team Avatar from The Last Airbender. We celebrate them a lot. But this is showing, like, the old, in the next episode, old wounds that are there from a group of people who, as young people, were forced to not only save the world, but then form the governments and the way that the world was, remake the world, create a new way of being, create a government and the ways the world would communicate and deal with those things, and what that cost was to their family. You see it over and over again that with, you know, Aang Katara's kids. No, when Kaya and Boomer are like, Tenzin, that was your relationship with Dad. Dad was not like that with us. And them having that realization of like, oh, wait, we had different realities in our household. And Katara knowing that they needed to go on that journey to this moment where Lin and Sue are like reuniting and we're seeing what Toph's fallout was from what she had to do in that moment. So there's a lot here, and it's often glossed over in some of these stories that I think they do really good work in that area of the show. So speaking of old wounds, in episode 6, it's morning time, and Lin is MIA at breakfast. She's like, fuck your couch. Sue discovers that Korra doesn't know how to metal bend. So Opal suggests that Bolin learn how to do it as well. But, you know, he's a little bit standoffish. She declines. But, you know, Korra's in. She wants to. Lin is wandering around the compound yelling at guards for not being on high alert because, you know, they're talking about what they're going to do when they get off. It is, again, another epic freaking conversation, side conversation with, like, characters that we'll never see again. I really love it. It was really great. So she seems to be feeling unwell, and Ai Wei tells her that she has to rest and deal with her repressed feelings. He refers her to an acupuncturist. Man, you know, the Metal Clan sure knows how to do it. Get you some acupuncture, cool out. On the flip side, Zahir and his gang have taken up residence in an abandoned building in Republic City after his escape during his fight with Kaya. They decide they need to get out the city, so they attack a delivery truck driver so that they can make their way out of the city, and they abandon a plan to assassinate the president of Republic City. They left a little too soon, in my opinion. That's another story for another time. I wish they could have stayed a day or two. The acupuncturist struggles to get a reaction from Lin, but eventually helps her unlock a memory. And we see in this memory Lin as a young woman. She tried to get Sue to follow the rules and go back to school as she comes inside their apartment. And Sue resisted to hang out with kind of like a crowd that we know is getting into trouble. Lin, who was a cadet police officer at the time, later responds to a call for criminal activity and finds out that her own sister is the getaway driver of this criminal activity. This memory upsets Lin so deeply that she heads home despite the acupuncturist's warning, right? In present day, Sue attempts to teach Korra metal bending using meteorites. Somebody else likes meteorites, you know? Like, just saying. Which apparently are easier to bend. When a nosy Bolin shows up, lurking around,
trying to pretend that he's looking for Pabu when Pabu is legitimately just sitting on his shoulder.
On his shoulder. Hanging. It's crazy.
Bolin.
Oh, man. Oh, my sweet turtle duck. He wants to learn too, but he just doesn't want to say that he wants to learn. So Bolin has, a pretty big case of imposter syndrome. He's like, I don't know. I'll just sit here. I'm just going to watch. How about I watch you guys? So he's chilling. Korra picks it up very quickly, and Bolin seems jealous. We can see that he is not happy about the fact that she's able to do it so quickly at that moment.
I wanted to be like, she's the Avatar. Like, what? Like,
and you got to deal with it.
Yeah.
Like she's the freaking Avatar.
She's just going to be able to pick. Like, her job is to learn different types of bending. Like, I don't. Okay. Okay, Bolin.
Yeah, also leveling up for the Avatar, right? Like, Aang couldn't even do this crap. So that's pretty cool. Like, you know, so that's at least that we know of. So after hallucinating, Lin is forced to go back to the acupuncturist, where she visits revisits the memory. And after catching Sue, the sisters had a fight. And in the process of Lin trying to apprehend her sister using metal bending, her sister cuts away the metal wire that Lin uses to try to catch her. And that is how Lin got the scars on her face. It accidentally cuts her on her face. The two of them are horrified at what has happened. When they go to see Toph, she tells Sue that she has to leave the city and she tears up the police report that Lynn made. Lynn's basically pissed because what, she's just going to get away with this again? And what are you doing? And Lynn awakes and is basically like, I'm going to get out of here and handle something I should have handled a long time ago, and heads back to her sister's house. Back at the compound, Bolin attempts to meddle Ben when no one is watching, but Opal creeps up and she's like, you're doing it again. You're being weird. What are you doing? And he admits that he's trying to learn metal bending, and he's tried it before, but he's always failed. She encourages him to go and learn from her mother because he's, you know, going on about how your grandmother is my hero. And she's like, yeah, but my mom learned from my grandmother. Go learn from my mom.
Mm-hmm.
Bolin takes the opportunity. It's crazy, right? Like, that he wouldn't have put that together. Like, oh, yeah, wait a second. This is Toph's daughter. I should probably ask. Bolin takes the opportunity to encourage Opal also to pursue her dream and to go to the Northern Air Temple and not stay here to do her airbending training.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they have a nice little scene where they, you know, put their arms around each other, look out on the horizon, and look at us supporting each other in our dreams. And it's pretty.
It's cute. It's super cute.
It's a cute moment. Yeah, cute moment. Bolin interrupts Cora and Sue's metal bending lesson to ask if he can learn too. So he does finally get up the courage. She agrees, but before they can start, a very angry Lynn shows up. Lynn Beifong, how we've never seen her before. She's been angry, but this time she's on 10.
Yeah, no, she's ready to tear everything up.
Yeah, it's top level pissed off. You know what I mean? Like, so, yeah. So Lynn goes off. Sue tries to explain that she isn't the same person and that her and their mom made peace about these things years ago, and that, you know, if Lynn would have came, they would have all been able to piece it out. But Lynn is not here for any of that shit. She is like, you know, I'm done. And then Sue does what younger siblings do.
Oh my God. Okay? She goes for the juggler. Just like,
she goes right away to the same thing that freaking Cora said, which makes me know that they probably was talking shit behind her back. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how I feel about it. No, I'm just saying, I don't know that for sure. But she does say, Lynn is going to be a bitter, lonely person, and that's why Tenzin ended things with her. What?
I would have probably murdered her. Like, she, This is so out of line and so cruel and so horrible to say in front of other people. Like, I understand people say mean, horrible things to each other when they're angry, but this was so cruel to say with an audience.
Yeah, it's wild. It's super wild. But, you know, don't feel bad for Lynn too much, because Lynn was like, okay, let's see about how, let's, you know what, let me see what these hands do. Okay, like, let's go. So they get at it and they start fighting. And so eventually what ends up happening is that Opal steps in and basically is like, listen, guys, stop. What are you doing? You are sisters. Like, what the heck is happening with you guys? You know, it's after really rough fight, to which Cora's like, should I step in and stop them? And I love Bolin's answer, like, nah, you don't have a sister or brother. This is how we work stuff out. It's fine.
And I agree with Bolin. You can't, the whole problem here is that Lynn hasn't had an opportunity to say her piece, to get her frustration out, that she's chosen silence instead. So she's been carrying around this open gaping wound for all this time. You have to confront the problem.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe violence isn't the best way to do it, but you have to confront the problem.
And we vilify Ozai for what he did to Zuko's face. And while it's not exactly the same because she didn't do it purposely, she's still the cause of something, of a wound that Lynn has to walk around with for the rest of her life.
Uh-huh.
And that feels like something. She's never had a chance to deal with that and, like, have a cathartic experience. It's like, yo, I'm pissed and I need to let this out on you.
Uh-huh.
So I think this is appropriate, but it exhausts Lynn. And when Opal steps in, Lynn collapses. The next day, they're all, you know, Bolin, Mako, and Cora are like, who's gonna knock? Who's gonna knock? Because Lynn's been sleeping for a while. Then, so finally, Mako knocks, and out of the room emerges Alin Beifong in a very different mood. She's looking like a million bucks. Like she just, you know, she's like, she slept for 16 hours. She's got on a new outfit. The acupuncture and a little bit of fighting did her well. And she even goes and apologizes to Opal for being so rude. And I thought that was really sweet that she tried to connect, knowing how Lynn is, that she tried to connect to Opal and really tried to mend that fence. And then Lynn also encourages her to follow her dream, that she explains that she spent all of her life trying to make her mother happy and became the chief of police, just like her mom. And it hasn't really made her happy, and it hasn't even done what she wanted to do in building a relationship with her mom, and that she shouldn't make the same mistake that she's made. So, with that information, Opal tells her parents that she wants to go and train with Tenzin, and they agree. After Sue and Lynn reconcile in front of the statue of their mother, the episode ends with Zaheer and Gang contemplating on where is the Avatar, and while Zaheer meditates, he determines that Korra is with the Metal Clan.
Oof. A lot happens in these episodes.
A lot happens. So let's talk about some notable things that kind of went on. Like, Zafu is a pretty dope town.
Yeah, it's cool. It's really cool. I really love this. I mean, there's a few things about it that are cool. Just the whole energy of the city is pretty cool. Sue seems to have this approach to leadership of like, we're all family. And she seems to genuinely care about the health and well-being of the citizens. So I think that's really cool. They encourage culture and architecture. They care about, you know, science and the arts. Like, it's a pretty cool city.
Yeah, I agree. I really dug it. I mean, I could see why they would recruit a person like Varric to be there with what they're working on. But I got to say, I don't understand why he wasn't why Lynn didn't just lock him up again and be like, hey, you're coming with me.
Why? I'm trying to bring him. Why is Varric not in prison? I understand from a show point of view why Varric is free. I just don't understand from a show, like from the point of view of the people in the show, why Varric is free.
Yeah, exactly.
This is not like Varric did some little thing. Like, he set up Asami. He tried to encourage a war in the Southern Water Tribe so that he could make money. Then he tried to get the president kidnapped, possibly assassinated, so that he could inspire that war. Like, what? But he's just free. It's crazy to me.
Yeah, it's super wild. And sounds like he's not going back anywhere anytime soon. It's kind of crazy.
I like Varric. Don't get me wrong. And I love Julie. But like, I just don't. It's perplexing.
Well, I mean, it is perplexing. And you do bring up something interesting. You got Varric and Julie. And we have, over the last few weeks, talked about how iconic Eska and Desna are. And we asked our listeners, we said, you know, if you could name a more iconic duo, then let us know. And there were some suggestions. We thought good ones that we should probably bring up.
There were several suggestions. So I want to give credit to everyone who submitted.
Yeah.
We're going to just pick from a few. So shout out to Anders, who just is a lovely friend of ours and a supporter of the podcast. He had a comprehensive list of most iconic duos. So his first one was Milo and Farts.
It's a good one. It's a good duo.
It's a good one. I wouldn't have thought of that one. Then we have Toph and Melons.
that is one of the best, actually. The Melon Lord herself, for sure.
Iroh and T.
Well done.
Well, yes. All of these are really good. Sokka. And this one hurts because it's Sokka in a picture of the moon. I'm not sure if he means Yue or the actual moon.
That's rough, buddy. That's so rough.
good stuff.
Oh my god.
And then we also have Zuko and Honor, which I think of this list, Zuko and Honor is the closest contender.
Yeah, 100%. It is an icon. That is an iconic duo. Like Zuko and his honor. Like, yes, 100%.
Then we also got some entries from Amelia and Alvin, who both also had suggestions. So Amelia's was Katara and Zuko. And
Zuko, which, you know what?
Okay, so had that actually panned out, as I said to Amelia on Facebook, that is the iconic duo that was promised. We never got it.
But I will say this, their side mission and to get revenge is one of the best parts of the show. It's not the best, but it's one of. It's like, because again, we'll talk more about it later episodes, maybe at the closer to the end. But just Zuko's capacity to understand empathetically what Katara needed in that moment was super, super good. You know what I mean? Like, and that mission is great. That mission is
freaking great. Yeah, the Southern Raiders episode is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Alvin submitted Appa and Momo, and I'm just gonna go ahead and say I think that Appa and Momo might be the only one that I'm really willing to concede to Eska and Desna.
I mean, the freaking hallucinating fight scene is one of my favorite moments in this show. It is epically good. It's so good. Yeah, no, they're just iconic all the way around. I mean, we have whole episodes where we can't, you know. I mean, Momo's responsible for eventually helping us in Ba Sing Se get to Appa. Like, they love each other. They're tight. They want to. I mean, Appa does want to eat them sometimes. It is what it is. You know what I mean? But it's a good time.
I'm gonna stick with Eska and Desna being the most iconic because this is my podcast and I get to decide. But I will say that Appa and Momo is a close second, and then Zuko and Honor is third place. All the others are honorable mention. These were wonderful suggestions. All of them made me laugh. You guys are great.
Absolutely great. And keep that kind of stuff going, guys. It's so fun to interact like that and just like have like that. I was cracking up too. I had such a good time reading this stuff. So good stuff. I love it. Let's transition a little bit, staying with this kind of stuff. And let's talk about what we were speaking about earlier about. We can kind of combo it, the parenting and also Lin and Sue's fathers. Like, who are they? Like, I want to start there. Like, who do you think? Like, seems like Sokka doesn't. I mean, there's moments where it kind of like, I mean, the meteorite thing kind of pulls me back into thinking maybe Sokka is in there somewhere. But like, what do you think?
Okay, so we have two contenders, which would be Sokka, who we know Toph always had a little thing for, and Sitaru, who was basically sort of like her business partner, her idea partner in the company that she and her father were running. I think I like the idea of Toph having a romantic relationship with both or either. Like, I think it's great. I like the idea of either of those contenders. I also like the idea that Toph was just kind of living her life in Republic City and maybe met two men that she had relationships with, but she didn't want to tie herself down to somebody. I like that too. I mean, I think it all works, but I definitely want this resolved. Was it Sokka or not? There's been a lot of speculation on the internet that it can't be Sokka because we would know if Katara, and Aang had a niece, and also then like if it's Sokka, then Tenzin and, you know, Lin could possibly be related, but that doesn't mean that Sue, you know, couldn't be Sokka's kid. It's an interesting thing to contemplate. I mean, we still don't know who Zuko ended up with.
Yeah, I agree. You know who I think he ends up with, but I mean, I think it's got to be, for me, it's like Suki or Mei. Like, you know what I mean? It's Mei or Suki. Like, that's where that lands for me for those two. But I kind of feel like, and I mean, obviously there's a lot of room for other story and they have runway to mess with, but I kind of feel like Sokka would be Sue's dad more than Lin. I don't think it would be Lin at all, like, because of the relationship and kind of, like you said, they would have been related and everybody in the families would have been like, nah, that's a no-go, unless, you know, we're on some, like, you know, Game of Thrones stuff.
I think my headcanon now is that Zuko and Suki got together at some point, mm-hmm. and then Toph was comforting Sokka.
There you go. I could go there, and that's how that went.
So yeah, that's my current headcanon. I actually think that's probably not what happened, but I'm just curious about this. I want this question answered more so about Sokka and his life, because we just have so little information about him. More so than Toph. Like, if these are two, the fathers of her children are just two random men that we never met, that's fine. I'm cool with that too. But I'm just like so desperate for details about Sokka's life that this adds perhaps an option. Like, I just hope this guy found love and was happy. And, even if it didn't end well, I would love to know what happened with Sokka.
I mean, I do too. And before I get to my next question about Sokka, I'm going to throw a wild card out there. What about the Dark One?
Listen, Sue's son does give me
very much like the Dark One. He gives you Dark One vibes. Maybe the Dark One was entered into the genetic pool, and all of a sudden, that's like what happened, right? The darkness skips a generation, right? It just transfers over. I don't know. I was thinking, maybe Toph was like, "Hey, Dark One," you know. So I don't know. That was a little wild card for you. But yeah, I mean, the other thing that came up with Sokka in this episode and it kind of plays into the parenting thing for me, is the fact that Korra's dad, Tenzin, and Sokka were responsible for imprisoning Zaheer and his whole crew. My question is that where it ends for Sokka? You see how powerful these benders are. You see that one of them has ties to combustion bending, and Sokka was pretty integral in bringing down Combustion Man. Why we don't see Sokka still alive? Was that because you got to think, like, this is later when they're older and then all of a sudden he's gone. So it made me start thinking in my head. I was like, oh wait, Sokka went on that mission, but now he's not alive. Like, and Katara is still alive, and they're not that much of age difference where that is the case. Is there something that happened on that mission? And obviously we won't know until they flesh that out, but that's something I want to answer to.
Yeah.
What happened on that mission?
I'm definitely curious about that. I mean, I think that would have come up, right? Like, Tenzin's telling this story, right? So he probably would have mentioned, like, my uncle lost his life in the mission, but I think it's definitely worth exploring, even, you know, like in a comic, in a movie or something like that. I'm curious about this period of time after the founding of Republic City, when Aang had already passed away, mm-hmm. when Korra was kidnapped. They attempted to kidnap her.
I mean, we get an answer that Sokka was still alive when Aang passed away.
Right.
So we get that answer, right? Like, because Korra was alive now. So we know that that's the case. And I don't know. Maybe he would have said, oh, my uncle died in it. But, I mean, they also did keep all of this secret for Korra for her whole life, which I thought is kind of irresponsible as well, right?
Yeah, so, I agree. I think that once Korra got old enough, they should have told her this, especially after she specifically asked in book two, mm-hmm. like, why did you guys keep me isolated? And they kind of don't tell her, they don't really tell her the truth.
Yeah, they goes into the parenting thing. It really does. I think, like, they've kept a lot of, that there's a lot of secrets and there's a lot of, like kind of like, you know, we need to make a unilateral decision for the greater good that's going on in all these parenting circles. And I think, ultimately, like, you know, Aang with, I gotta, like, focus on Tenzin because he's gonna be the future of the airbending nation. You know, this situation with, like, what happened with making the decision to keep Korra locked up because they weren't sure why they wanted to kidnap them, which I don't know that, I mean, they should have had some knowledge. The different things we're seeing with Toph, like, there's like a real disconnect with like the fact that, hey, you could go save the whole world, but what about the world that's like right underneath your nose? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So anyway, let's talk about that. Let's talk about some of the teachings of the White Lotus around old wounds.
So one of the themes that Legend of Korra explores really well is this connection between actions of the past and how they influence the present. And this theme is reflected upon in both books one and two, especially when considering the actions of Avatar Aang and Avatar Wan and how they influence the world as it is today. But in this season, we're looking more deeply about how the past can haunt us on a deeper, more personal level. In exploring Lin and Sue's relationship and how it impacted Lin and ultimately begins to affect her on a really physical level, we have to reflect on what past experiences we are still carrying around with ourselves every day. Lin's resentment towards her sister, framed her entire worldview of being kind of inflexible. And more importantly, led to this longer estrangement that she had from her family. Lin's anger made her miss opportunities to bring love and compassion into her life. And sometimes family trauma requires us to separate from family because of the toxicity. But in this case, Lin prolonged her own suffering by trying to avoid the issue rather than confronting it and allowing herself to heal. So it was nice to see her finally confront it and then be able to move forward. Now she has a relationship with her sister and with Opal and, you know, hopefully in the coming days with her nephews as well.
Yeah, I love that. I love what you have to say there. And I definitely, if any, you know, the thing that I can kind of point to based on what you just talked about is like what Lin looked like the day after she was able to confront it, deal with it, and have that like final like thing, right? Because the next day she looks so relaxed. Mm-hmm. She's wearing like, she's like, you know, changed her clothes. She's like, more, you're not even carrying her body. You see the body language when she was there was very hunched over, and like she was like when she was like carrying it, very like, you know, and tight. And she looked just like relaxed. And I think like that's something that we can all kind of look at for ourselves is like, you know, that the harm that it brings us to hold on to things or to stuff things down, because she had the right to be angry and she needed to let that anger out. And sometimes we try to act like, oh, no, I'm fine. But there's stuff that we need to like get out in some way that's positive and cathartic to get it out. And so those practices are good, too, I think.
Yeah. And I love the way the show. This show and also The Last Airbender really help us realize and acknowledge that emotional hurt and pain and trauma can affect us physically. Yep. We saw this with Zuko several times where that inner conflict basically incapacitated him, made him feel unwell. And so seeing, Lin having the same experience where she needs to let go of this conflict and work through it and confront it. And that takes a physical toll on her. I think that's really important to keep in mind because it is something that happens to us, that we hold on to tension and anxiety and depression and trauma. And then it can have an impact on our physical well-being as well.
100%. 100%. Well, with that, that is the end of our show for this week. We wish you guys, you know, with that on that note, just lots of health and well-being and happiness. And we've enjoyed and been having a great time bringing this content to you and having these conversations and talking about it. Please, again, like you see that we read and look at our stuff, please engage at Kin Folklore Podcast on Facebook. Hit us up on Twitter, Kin Folklore Pod, or Instagram. Kin Folklore Pod, and we look forward to continuing these conversations, and we hope you have a great week.
Bye, everyone.